At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Spirit Box.
This is a message from the lost. This is a message from the silent. It is intended for the ones who struggle with life's silence.
Bakken uses the spirit box to communicate with the dead. Not everyone believes the power and validity of the device. Greg, too, had skepticism when he entered the field. However, very soon, a series of undeniable, convincing voices would make Greg a believer in the impact the device could have on communicating with spirits. Today, Greg Bakken joins us on The Grave Talks to discuss his paranormal journey using the spirit box to communicate with the dead.
I remember very vividly when I was 4 years old, my grandmother passed away, and that was my mom's mom, and my mom was very close to my grandmother. And it was a bit of a shock, and I don't think my mom actually ever really completely recovered from it because they were best friends. And a couple things happened, actually. One that I remember, one that I do not remember. And someone told me about it. And what it was that, first of all, after the funeral, we're sitting, and it's not like directly after, maybe a day or so after, you know, as a four-year-old, you don't really understand time anyway, so who knows when it actually was. But back in the house, back in my parents' house, I'm sitting in the living room with my mom, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, came this extremely strong waft of the smell of roses. It just comes in, overpowers, and then it leaves. And I just looked to my mom and I said, "What is that?" And she just, without batting an eye, she's just like, "That's your grandma." And I was like, you know, and actually, to be honest, I had kind of forgotten about it. And all of a sudden, many, many years later, kind of came back to me, and I said to my mom one, I think it might have been Easter dinner or something, like, "I have a memory of this, and this happened. Do you recall this at all, or am I just like totally making this up?" She goes, "No, absolutely, I remember it very vividly." And then she went on to tell me that as a four-year-old, I was at the coffin, at my grandmother's coffin, and I was talking to her, and mom said, "Well, we got to go." And I said, "No, I'm not done talking to grandma yet." And I still talked to her for a couple more minutes, and then I was done. And I have absolutely no recollection of that whatsoever.
I wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing that you have no recollection of that.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you think, geez, you know, it's like, that's kind of, whether or not she was actually talking to me, that's almost immaterial. It's almost like you'd still be like, "Oh yeah, I kind of remember having this kind of weird moment, even if it was playing out in my mind or what." But the fact that I didn't remember it at all, I thought was very interesting, actually.
It is. And it goes back to the whole, you know, do children have a higher sensitivity to these things than adults? Are they able to pick up on things more than we can now? And that kind of, you know, points in that direction, certainly. So so that was what your mother told you, and then told you about the experience of the smell. Very accepting, it sounds like, of just the fact that that's your grandmother. That's my mom. That it is what it is, in a very factual sort of tone.
It really was. And she had gone on to tell me that there were times that when grandma was still alive, she'd stay over at our house, and she'd stay in the basement and lay on the couch in the basement. And mom had told me a few times that she had gone downstairs and just to go downstairs and looked in that general direction. And grandma was laying on that couch after she had passed. And then that moment of like looking again and she's not there. And, you know, obviously the question you always ask yourself, well, is that just because, you know, she'd been there a number of times, you just kind of seen that yourself, or is that really some sort of energy that was there?
Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder, because both could be logical explanations. It's not that someone's trying to make something up or tell a tall tale. It's just, you know, our mind works in mysterious ways. And sometimes that's how it goes. But in other cases, no, we're in fact seeing something that otherwise we think should not be there, in fact, is. So
absolutely.
For you yourself, in your memory, when you go back and dig into this archive of my personal ghostly experiences, whatever you've labeled that folder in your mind, what's your first one that you actually do remember, that you can pull up those memories of personally, rather than just what you were told was your first experience?
Absolutely. Well, you know, funny enough, it actually coincides with becoming a paranormal investigator, because I actually kind of got into it more on the tech side than through anything else. So just as somebody who was very curious about it, a number of years ago in the building that I work in, which dates back to 1916, a friend and I decided that we were going to go down to, you know, obviously, you know, the way that you're kind of brought up in this stuff is you have to think, oh, it's the scariest place, so that's where you want to go. And that's obviously not true. But we ended up getting a spirit box from that, you know, very reputable paranormal store called Amazon. And we go and we get the spirit box and we go downstairs, and I don't even have an external speaker on. It's just the speaker that's on the spirit box. And you ask a question and you're not getting, you know that it's not like a regular radio. You're not getting radio frequencies. You're not getting bits and pieces of the local radio. You're not getting anything at all. You're just kind of getting a static pulse. And all of a sudden you ask a question and you get a response. And it's an intelligent response. You know, our first question we asked was, what's your name? And the name that came back was Nate. And that was like, all right, that's really interesting. Well, maybe that's a fluke. You know, Nate, do you have a last name? And the last name comes through Lund. And you're like, all right. You know, then it starts to become like, it's not scary. It's extremely exhilarating, honestly, because you're starting to almost immediately figure out how the gear works, and then how you can ask the questions. The funny thing is, you know, I didn't actually get into the paranormal for, you know, because I had a lot of experiences. I probably did, and I never really was open to them. In fact, I remember one of the first TV shows I'd ever watched on the paranormal, early 2000s, some show, and I don't even know what it was, where they thought the best way to get a hold of a spirit was taking one of their members, putting him in a coffin and burying him alive underground, and, you know, just seeing if that would help get spirit interaction. I thought, oh, that's really ridiculous, actually. It wasn't until later I started doing some research, because I have kind of a macabre sort of a background to myself. You know, I just enjoy that kind of thing, that I started to really kind of get into it and realize that, you know, there's some equipment out there that I would like to see if I could get a hold of spirits. And then the more and more I did that, the more and more I realized that I think I might be intuitive also.
So it really kind of opened a Pandora's box for you once you started digging into this, of realizing, hey, maybe there actually are legitimate ways of communicating. But between that point of digging into this and going to Amazon and buying the equipment and childhood and you know, the four-year-old you having that experience but no memory of it, in that window there, between not really having much of an interest in doing any sort of investigating, what was your attitude about the paranormal as you grew older? Did you believe it to be real? Did you believe the story that your mother told you about your childhood experience? Or did you have some sort of rational explanation that you were kind of living with, going, yeah, maybe it was ghostly, but maybe it was this or that? What was your attitude before you started digging deeper?
I believed. You know, I think I'm someone who likes to think of the positive to things, and that positive is the idea that that we exist after life. I find if I don't have that belief, whether it's connected to faith or religion or whatever, it doesn't really, almost doesn't really matter. I want to have that belief that I can continue on after I die, that this version of me can go forward a little bit more. And so I always entertained the idea that that is possible, that spirits exist, that we exist after we die. But I never really thought about doing much with it. And I think at the time it might have been because I was afraid of what might happen. You know, you just don't know what happens when you start playing around in that sort of field. And I didn't even really know where to start, to be honest. And I hate to say it, in a sense, because it was a lot of the TV shows that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of what to expect or what to see, whether or not that they're, you know, real or not. It's almost immaterial. For some, you can use that as the starting board to be like, okay, this is how I can get into something. And you start meeting like-minded people. Other people, unfortunately, take it too far and will be like, well, I see people, you know, yelling in the air trying to provoke something, and that doesn't really work out all that well. But I'm more on the side of, I just thought that it's very possible that spirits could communicate with us, but I didn't really know what to do about it. And quite frankly, I at that time, it didn't really seem very interesting to me. It felt like for me, getting into the paranormal was at the right time in the right way with the right people. You know, it's almost like it was, not to sound too grandiose about it, but it almost sounded like it was kind of destined for this period of my life, that this is what I would be getting into, and this is how much time and effort I'd be putting towards it.
Sure. What was it specifically that pushed you over to make that Amazon purchase that one day? This is not an advertisement for Amazon, I should just note to our audience, because we have advertisers all the time, but they're not one today. But it's just funny because, you know, you think, oh, you go to the ghost store, but there's a lot of things you can get anything on Amazon. So what was it that pushed you there to make you say, I'm going to buy this and I'm going to try this? What was that?
It was really the idea of watching the TV shows and seeing that people were using like the device, like a spirit box, and they were getting some kind of response. And I thought, boy, if that actually works, that would be amazing. I can't believe that it would work. But, you know, the whole Amazon thing was because I had no idea where to buy anything. You know, it's just like, you're just like, okay, you know, and you know, even way back then, Amazon was a place that you'd be like, well, maybe they might have it. And you type it in like, oh, good. Okay. Yeah. $60. I could afford that.
Sure.
But the idea was like, well, if they can do it, why can't I do it? And I wanted to see right away, like what sort of reaction I would get going into locations, even just in this old building that I worked at, and being like, well, you know, if I ask a question, will I get a response? And one of my favorite from that night, the first time, you know, the first night I ever used something like that, I was with a friend, Jeff. His name was Jeff. And I said to the spirit box, through the spirit box, my name is Greg and this is Jeff. Can you say Greg and can you say Jeff? And the both names came through very clearly, and I have that recording. You know, it's just like, wow, that's incredible. I, you know, your adrenaline just starts pumping because suddenly it opens a whole new realm of just thinking.
Yeah.
You know, you're suddenly like, oh wow, I could possibly talk to just about anybody if the stars align and if they're interested in talking back with me or not. And suddenly it became like an addiction to try to, speak to more spirits.
Before you had a chance to use the box that you took out there, between purchasing and using, what was your attitude? Did you think it was BS? Were your expectations like, we're going to get this and it's going to go back to returns? Or did you have confidence that this is legitimate? Because it's easy to see or to think this is BS, especially if you know how overproduced television is.
Yes.
You know, it's easy to go and say, yeah, you know, maybe there's some level to legitimacy of this, but, you know, it's going to be, what was it for you?
It's interesting because I think the idea of really was like, well, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. What scared me more was going down into the creepy basement of our building, and not having been down there for a while, I just imagine it being like no lights whatsoever, just really dark and claustrophobic. And I thought to myself, is this really a wise idea? Because I have no idea what to expect down there. And maybe this is, you know, the part of it is the unknown, talking to the unknown. And suddenly you're in a place that's just really dark. And it's like, this doesn't seem very smart at all. And it's so funny because we get down in the basement the night we do our, you know, using air quotes, investigation. And you get down there and the thing is lit up like nobody's business. I mean, it's a basement in a business. So of course they have all the fire code lights and all that stuff. And they have like the overhead fluorescent that we ended up turning off. But I mean, it was nowhere near as creepy as I had in my mind. And immediately I'm like, oh, okay, well this could work. And, you know, I think probably Jeff and I were very much in the situation of like, we think it will work. I think we were more in the school of it will work. I mean, I believed in Santa Claus much older than probably any child should ever believe in him. So, I mean, I think I'm a sucker for believing that things can happen and that magical things or things that are unexplained are possible, where, you know, probably a more grounded person will be like, well, you know, let's check this out. Let's, you know, test this and test that. And I'm just like, it's going to work. You know, I'm just like immediately like, this is going to be amazing. So I think I was more on the side of like, yeah, this is going to be great.
Now, when you went in and did this first investigation with the box, what was the story of the location itself? What's the backstory of this first, and I'll put it in air quotes too, investigation that you did? Because every time, you know, the first time you go out and do something, you know, it's at a level almost anything in this world is with this sort of stuff is going to be amateur, because everybody has their own way of doing it. And there's no true, this is the only way, that is the only way. We're all just kind of doing our own thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that first investigation of yours, what exactly was the backstory of the location that you wanted to investigate?
Well, we didn't even have that, to be very honest. We knew, you know, there was like, it's like, let's go downstairs and see if it works.
Okay.
You know, that was the funny thing about it. So we go down, you know, we go down there and we did a little bit of like work to see if anyone in the building, it's a big 12 story tall building, in downtown Minneapolis. And, it has a number of tenants in it and stuff. It's been around for a great deal of time. And we tried to find out any information. We did it completely backwards because, we went out there, we asked some questions, we got some names, we got, a couple of EVPs. One of my favorite things we got is we had a camera set up and we had someone yell in the basement that we can't explain who that is, which was really interesting. And my purpose of doing so, because I work in an advertising agency and I work in television production and film production within the advertising agency. We're making videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make my own little web series of all this paranormal stuff because, you know, I have an enjoyment of telling stories. It's not about anything other than telling a story and trying to make sense of what we're doing. And I after the fact, we brought in some people who've had experiences in the building themselves, and a couple of them we recorded on camera and we got some information. And one of the guys there, it says, like, you know, I'm down in this basement and all of a sudden I hear someone yell. And we played back the yell we got, and he's like, that's it. That's exactly it, which was really interesting. But he also had a full-body apparition walk past him in the basement prior to us talking with him, and that's why we brought him in. And he went through exactly what he did and why, where he was, and knew he was the only one in the basement. Went down to a certain hallway. He was up on a ladder doing some work, and some person walks past him. There's no way that he should have walked past him, and he gets down off of his ladder, follows him around the corner, and he's gone. And it's like, okay, so there is stuff happening down here. And then the more and more we talk to people, almost everybody always had a story about that building. They talked about different things. Plus, the building that we're in, the main floor had a nightclub in it. And that was a nightclub owned by the artist Prince, mm-hmm. called Glam Slam. And the floor that I work on used to be his penthouse while he was, living there and working there. So there's a lot of interesting energy there also that is really kind of fun to explore, and that we've tried to over the years.
Have I
got Prince?
I was just going to do the atypical question of, have you communicated with Prince, and is he doing okay?
I'll tell you, I have never until just very recently ever asked for someone famous to come through the spirit box, because I always thought that that's a bit twee, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bit like, oh, you know, especially what after they pass or something. Because when we were working, we helped out over at some ghost tours after Prince had died, like just like, you know, that weekend, you know, there everyone's like, can you see if Prince is around? Like, we're not going to ask for Prince, okay?
Yeah.
First of all, his name, I mean, I'm in Minnesota. That's Prince's, you know,
yeah.
area. And you're going to be going through a spirit box, and if you're picking up any radio stations, there's probably a chance that someone might be talking about Prince.
Yeah.
So yeah, we never have. I've actually never have actually asked about Prince in that location. And, you know, I've asked about some other celebrities in a couple other places because it seemed appropriate. We've gotten some sort of like response through either K2 or through a spirit box, but you can't be like, well, that's definitely, you know, John Lennon. You know, it's just like, well, it kind of sounded like him, but that's kind of, it's just almost too ridiculous to think that, oh yeah, I got him. Yeah, I he said hi. Yeah, mm-hmm. we're good.
Yeah, so you're within 12 hours of someone dying, you're not posting YouTube videos of having conversations with the dead individual.
I'm leaving that to somebody else. Yeah.
And then you look and go, yeah, it's no wonder you're picking up these audio bites, because yeah, it's all over the news right now. Go figure.
Yeah.
I
need that.
Yeah, but anyhow, I just had to get that in there. So it's such an interesting thing. Just the concept of the ghost box or the instruments that do such things as far as communicating. And I want to keep diving into this, because a lot of times on the show, we don't necessarily talk about equipment, but every once in a while, you know, the conversation just goes there, and it's fun to really dig into that individual area. Because there's so many questions I have. I do not go out and investigate. I sit here in the studio and I talk to hundreds of people around the world every year about their exercises and investigations. And that's as close as I get. So I have it leaves me with a lot of questions, just as a listener would have, as far as what is actually going on out there behind the scenes. So your first time when you're out there and you have this equipment and you're using the ghost box, it sounds like you're getting results, which is really kind of surprising, because quite often from the experiences that I've heard about, people are out there, they have the equipment, you know, they're intent on doing an investigation, or maybe they are experienced investigators and they're mm-hmm. this is a new piece of equipment that they picked up, and it takes a long time, if ever, to get somewhat conclusive evidence that, hey, there's something here. This isn't just a bunch of random noise. Was that true your first time going out? You were picking up pretty, you know, true convincing evidence that you're getting an intelligent response?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, absolutely. Oh. And we were as shocked. I mean, and we didn't go out there thinking to ourselves, because once again, we didn't know anything about anything.
Yeah.
To be fair, we probably still don't. And, you know, we're out there and we're getting responses, and we didn't go out there thinking, well, as you know, a lot of people don't get responses the first time. We just thought, well, if we get something, it'd be great. And suddenly right away, we're getting names and we're getting numbers when we're asking for age. And we got, you know, it's like, is there one of our questions we asked in the basement? Is there anybody else here besides Nate? And you got this female voice that she just says, hello. I'm like, holy cow. Okay, this is great. Did we get a lot of responses? No. We probably got about 6 to 8 responses that are really decent between the number of floors that we investigated at. But we certainly, it was enough to be like, well, I think we might have something here. It certainly propelled me personally into wanting to be a full-blown paranormal investigator and see where I go with this, because it just felt like, you know, it sounds so weird, but it feels like that it was meant to be for me to do paranormal investigating. Like I really felt like I was attracting the spirits to want to talk to me. You know, other people have said that, you know, you can be like a lighthouse for spirits. And I believe that I possess that to a certain extent. I think a lot of people possess that. And, you know, I've, you know, now when I do spirit box sessions, I'll just sit there and I'll kind of just meditate for a minute or so and be like, I'm opening myself up for spirits to talk with us. You know, I feel like that I might be using a spirit box, like a small radio, but the spirit communication is actually coming through me. You know, it's actually, I'm a conduit that's helping getting that spirit responses out there.
And that's interesting. Let's talk about that for a moment, because I know you had mentioned that earlier, that you believe you discovered that you yourself are somewhat of a conduit or sensitive to these things. And I believe that there's are people out there that it's almost like a sense is the way that I like to describe it. Some of us can see better. Some of us can hear better. Some of us are more sensitive to these things than others. And, you know, it's like a 1 to 10 scale. Some of us are at 1, some of us are at 10. It is what it is. When it comes to that, and it's an interesting thing when it comes to a spirit box and being able to get results out of it. And some will sit there and say, I get nothing, absolutely nothing. And anybody who does, it's BS. And there's some who will use it and like, this is great. This thing is really picking up a lot of things. And you can't deny, in my opinion, when you are getting legitimate results out of it, that there's something to that. I believe you can be frustrated as hell and get no results, and that's just how it worked out for you. That would be frustrating, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't work for every single person. Just as if, and this is a fun one for the kids out there who have never used an AM/FM radio, in the old days, or if you're in a storm shelter, that'd probably be the only other time most people are picking up an actual radio other than in their car. And you're listening for storm coverage, you may notice, here's a pro tip, hold on to the antenna. If you have an antenna on that radio and you pull it out and you're getting bad reception, hold on to the antenna. Your body will act as an antenna, and it will then magically make the signal come in better in many cases where it's kind of fuzzy or fading out. It's almost the same sort of principle that we're talking about here. With a spirit box, you are almost acting as that antenna that is strengthening that incoming message, that incoming audio or frequency that it's picking up on. And without you or any individual who may have that ability, maybe that is the magic, you know, sauce here to some of these spirit boxes working better for some than others.
I think it's very possible. You know, I find that when I do events and stuff, we've done events like at the Palmer House in Sauk Center, Minnesota, and we would have people in a hotel room, in their hotel room, like wanting to, like, we're all trying to lead investigation, and I'll put the spirit box on the bed so because everyone could hear it. And then I'm realizing that we're not getting a lot, so I'll pick it up and I'll start asking the questions, and that's when they start coming through more. I thought, oh, that's right, yeah, I should be holding on to this. I mean, or anybody for that matter. And what I try to do in these, like these public investigations, I'll hand the spirit box off to people, because let's see how it affects with each individual person. I believe that you may get completely different people responding to you depending on who's holding it also. I think that there's a lot of familiarity with spirits, you know, whether or not they know you directly or not, but it's certainly a matter of like how animals work with people. You know, oh, I feel safe talking with you. I want to talk with you. You feel like a good person. I feel like a lot of that is all part of the equation to be able to get good spirit interaction.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think a lot of us overlook sometimes are the facts that a lot of these ghosts, spirits, whatever you want to call them, many of them, and probably I'd say most of them, have been human at one point in time and were walking around and still possess most of the same qualities as they did when they were here in terms of trust and wanting to communicate with someone that they feel comfortable with. Sincerity is a big thing. People avoid people that they don't believe are going to be sincere or safe or legitimate to talk to. But if you're coming across as a sincere, normal person who doesn't have other intent or isn't just going to use them for what they are. And if you're a ghost, pretty easy to get used for being a ghost. Right now, if you just want to talk and try and communicate, you're going to go with whoever they feel most sincere with and not just, hey, I'm a freak show. Look at me. I'm dead. So it makes sense that is a big element to this. You had said that when you had that experience and you walked away from that going, oh my gosh, this almost feels, you know, like it's kismet. There's a reason this is happening now. I'm drawn to this. Maybe this is, you know, part of my journey. What went on after that? I know you then decided, hey, it's time to get a something going here with a group or investigating this further. What was the path for you beyond that?
I didn't know where to go with it afterwards because I wanted to create something because I make things, whether, and you know, it's like a podcast or a web series or something like that. And, you know, I'm sure people are like, oh, so another one who wants to get famous. It's like not getting famous at all. I just wanted to tell the story of what I was doing. But I didn't know how to do it. And so after I did that initial investigation and started to really think about it, I started to have dreams every night, every single night. I had dreams that I was a paranormal investigator and that I would be going to locations and I would be investigating. The dreams never included the spirits I was talking to or anything. It never actually got to the investigation part. It always was me being at these locations and I was an investigator. And literally, these dreams happened every single night for probably about 3 months or so. It was insane. And that was where I was like, I got to do something with this. I have to be able to go out and create some sort of like way to investigate, because the whole idea of me creating something was because I didn't know anyone else in the field. It was just literally me doing stuff because I didn't know anybody else. And I ended up getting a decent audio recorder, different from the audio recorder I would have used on an investigation. Turns out I would use it now. I mean, this is, you know, these are really decent. It was a Zoom, and I ended up going to a cemetery and documenting like a full audio recorder, just the entire session, like the entire time I walked around the cemetery, and another one meant just for like the investigation stuff. And I walked around and I was doing all the spirit box work and stuff, and it was really windy and I recorded a bunch of stuff, but I wasn't getting anything. So I thought, well, you know, that one time at my old building, that might have been it. And I don't have any real, like, I'm not going to get any more responses. And I get home and I listen to those recordings, and those responses were there. They were there the entire time. I just couldn't hear them. And so I'm listening to myself talking, asking questions, and I'm getting these responses, and I'm like, this is unbelievable. And what I ended up doing with this and a couple other locations is I'm putting all this stuff together to create these, like, kind of, you know, I always kind of probably wrongly associated them with this American life in a sense, because they're not like, you know, what you're doing and what I do on KCOR, where you're just like, you're doing shows and you're having a kind of a format. This is really like, here I am walking into a situation and this is what I'm getting, and you're here with me. And this is, you know, we come to these conclusions kind of together in a sense. It's very interesting. And it ended up being, these places were absolutely, you got the responses we were getting were incredible. We did one, I did one at in Rogers, Minnesota, at a cemetery. The next one, I was in New York for a different reason, and we went to the Morris Jamel Mansion, and they were kind enough to let me do a spirit box session there during the day. And that place is weird. That place has some really weird things happening there, and we got some incredible responses. But the one that really stood out for me, I went with a friend on a fishing trip of all things, and we went to Strawberry Point, Iowa, which is this small little town called Strawberry Point. And we're getting ready to go fishing, but you know, as you do in Iowa, we're like, let's get a drink. And we went to the bar in the hotel we're staying at, which is said to be haunted. It's called the Franklin, and it's not. We actually really didn't get anything while we're there, but I told one person, I think the bartender, like, oh yeah, I do some paranormal investigating. And next thing I know, the whole bar knows that we're paranormal investigators. Well, I'm a paranormal investigator. My friend Freddie was just along for the ride. He took me to fishing. I was going to take him to see if we could talk to spirits. And everybody suddenly knew we're paranormal investigators. And, you know, there was a moment of kind of being a little frightened, because I'm like, well, what are they going to do with that information? You know, maybe, you know, not everyone looks at people who are paranormal investigators like, oh, this is really cool. Some are just like, you're weird. You're, you know, you're whatever. So I wasn't sure. And suddenly this woman across the bar, maybe a little inebriated, probably, she says, I bet you couldn't last 5 minutes in my house. It's so haunted. And I'm just like, bring it on. Let's do it. And we cut a long story short, because it is a long story. We went back and forth for probably about a half an hour, because I think she kind of realized, she's like, I just invited two strange men into my house. And now and I'm on the other side going, well, now you invited me. I want to see how haunted this place really is. Well, she ended up getting a friend, and all four of us went back to her house, and we did an investigation. Her house had been in her family for a great number of years, and the house goes back to the 1800s, just a farmhouse. And boy, did we get incredible, incredible responses, going from people who were related to her to people who are saying Freddie's name. One of my favorite pieces that we recorded was, we were upstairs in this kind of loft area, and we were running the spirit box, and I heard something. You know, so you know if there's something that's beyond like something loud like a spirit box, you know that there's something not quite right. So I turn off the spirit box. I'm just sitting there. I'm like, I'm hearing voices, and everyone's like, I'm hearing voices too. And you listen back to the recording, and the voices are there. They are downstairs. The dogs are barking downstairs, and you could hear something talking to them downstairs, and there's no one else in the house. And I thought to myself, well, we're going to leave at some point. We're going to leave this woman in this house. And this place legitimately has stuff going on here. And it was absolutely incredible, an amazing situation.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Greg Bakken regarding the Spirit Box. Be sure to check out Greg's work at mn-ghostbox.org. That is the website of Minnesota Ghost Box. In part two of our interview for Gravekeepers exclusively, we're going to ask Greg what shockingly amazing communication did Greg pick up when he used the Spirit Box at the Morris Jamel Mansion. What does Greg think of the dismissive attitude that many have towards the spirit box? Are there any rules as to the type of spirit that can come through the box? Has Greg been in a situation where disturbing messages came across, and how did he handle it? And what do you do when you feel you've encountered a dark spirit that doesn't want you there on an investigation? That and more in part two of our interview with Greg Bakken. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program for only $5 a month. You get access to every single bonus episode that we have, part twos to all of our episodes, advanced episodes, and more. To get it, go to our website, thegravetalks.com, click Become a Gravekeeper, or directly at patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you unlimited access to all of our content, and you're supporting us and keeping us on the air. Without that support, this show would not exist. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Well, I'm on the other side of the blink of your eye. When you see me, you realize everything's fine.